Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Happy Halloween to everybody. I hope you all had a very happy Halloween last night, especially all of you with children, myself included. Boy, oh boy. Fun time of the year. Also a fun time of the year to be watching these markets, as on this weekend show, we're going to be focusing front half of the show on more of the metals sector, more precious metals, and potential opportunities in copper stocks. Back half of the show, going over to the energy sector, oil and natural gas. As much as they're trying to rebound, that market, we're still wondering when we're going to see a true run higher. Just as a note for everyone listening, please go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack account. Just search The KE Report. That's where you can listen to the full weekend show, as well as all our daily editorials covering market moves and company updates. We're kicking off this weekend show with Dave Erfle, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. We held off on recording this as we usually record on Tuesday, but this week with the Fed meeting and the correction, quite frankly, the pretty rough start to the week, we wanted to wait until later on this week to get a lay of the land for the metals market. Dave, when it comes to gold, is holding right around that $4,000 level. Yes, it went through some volatility and a correction early on this week, but one thing I'm noticing is it looks like, at least by the end of the week, the stocks are trying to bounce back a little bit stronger than gold. We'll see where this all goes. And you know what? This is all a correction that we've been talking about and waiting for, but what are you seeing out there on the gold and gold equity front?
Yeah, it's encouraging the way the shares are acting. I mean, the gold price corrected from last Tuesday to this Tuesday, it corrected 11%, and silver corrected 16%. And you had the GDX and GDXJ correct around 20%. But at the same time, you've seen institutional inflows into ETFs remaining really resilient. I mean, gold-backed ETFs, they added over 723 ounces in mid-October. And silver funds brought in 13 million ounces in a single week. So this is evidence that smart money is basically using this pullback to add more exposure, not reduce it. And it's showing up in the way the shares have bounced back here pretty quickly. I mean, last week I said that I was looking for the GDX to quickly test its former all-time high from 2011 at 67, and it came within a dollar of doing that this week. And then GDXJ, I was thinking maybe a 25% correction down to 85. It got down to 88. It corrected around 22%. And they're trying to maintain those lows here as the gold price, as you said, is trying to hang around 4,000 at the end of the month here. But what's really encouraging is the action in the TSX venture. I mean, after nearly doubling from its April low, the venture's only off has only corrected 10%. That's half of what the majors have corrected. So, you know, 50% of the venture is made up of those higher risk, early stage developers and drill plays and more risky juniors. So seeing this, the venture only correct by 10% and seeing buying coming in here at the end of the week, that's really encouraging.
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of the stocks, Dave, are bouncing back with volume, with more participation. It does bring up the question, though, whether this is the buy the dip moment where the people on the sidelines are coming back in that maybe missed the run and are trying to jump into some of the stocks on their watch list, or if this is a dead cat bounce that's part of a larger correction, because there's a lot of technical analysts on the Twitter sphere and still out there in the blogosphere talking about that was the end of the gold rip, and that we're going to see much lower prices in the metals, but also in the mining stocks, and that we're not going to see those peaks again for a long time. What's your thought? Could this be a dead cat bounce that we're seeing, even though it's exciting to see a little life come back in right away? Are people setting themselves up for the wrong expectations here?
I mean, we could see another leg down. That's always possible. I think I also brought up last week that a correction down to the 3,500 area, that would be a 20% correction. That would be perfectly normal after the huge move that we saw over the past year. I mean, what, the gold price has more than doubled over the past 18 months. And the last time we had an 11% correction, it took 4 weeks to correct 11%. And here's it's only taken a week because it climbed so far so fast, right? Once it got to 4,000, it zoomed up to 4,400 really quick. So it's perfectly normal to see this, especially after the gold price has ran up so far so fast. I mean, if you take a look at what Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell had to say during the conference, he was obviously frustrated because both employment and inflation continue to rise. So he's basically saying, hey, we look at unemployment, it's rising. We're seeing layoffs ratcheting up. And someone even asked him a question about layoffs. And you see inflation still remaining 50% above its fantasy 2% target. It's still at 3%. And at the same time, he mentioned how GDP growth is less than 2%. So that adds up to stagflation. And that's what the gold price is looking at. You know, it's looking at the stagflation that's in the system now, and that'll probably continue to come in the system because Powell blamed the tariffs. And also, you know, it's also not the Fed's fault that the government continues to borrow more money and raise the deficit that it's already in. These deficits continue to get to go higher, and there's no intention to pay anything off. So the Fed can't do anything about that. They can't do anything about tariffs. So they're frustrated. And if you take a look at what happened during the announcement of the rate cut, we had the Fed's yes man Mearon. He wanted to lower more, and then we had another Fed governor say that they didn't want to lower at all. So there's uncertainty inside the Fed, inside the Federal Reserve itself. There's uncertainty in investors wondering, you know, how all this is going to resolve. And the gold price continues to love the uncertainty.
Again, we still need to see where this rebound comes because it was a quick sell-off. And even the stocks, while they are showing a bit more life, there's a little work to do on the upside. So only time will tell on that. But let's dive a little bit more into what we saw in October on the financing front. We were talking so much about how everybody was raising money, every financing was upsized. The $2 million financing turned into an $8 to $10 million financing, $10 million financings. Now they're $100 million. We do have some data around all the financings in October, and it really was a record. So, Dave, share some of that data that you have on financings in the sector and how that carries over to when you're analyzing some of these companies, please.
Yeah, I mean, in October alone, it raised $2.9 billion across 185 financing deals. And that's the largest monthly volume for sales and of new shares by public companies in this sector since November of 2013. And there was comments by capital market executives saying almost everything's being oversubscribed, and we're seeing that. And many of these deals have been upsized. So the capital markets remain very strong. So, you know, these companies are, most of them are now fully cashed up well into next year, cashed up for drill programs, cashed up to continue to de-risk late stage projects, what have you. I mean, that's very positive. And a lot of these financings in the earlier stage juniors, they're coming from strategic partners like majors and mid-tiers. That's very positive to see. And most of them are warrantless as well. That's the investors love to see that. So this is all very positive. And like I said, when you take a look at the action in the TSX venture, that reflects that investors see this as positive, and the weakness is being bought in these higher risk juniors.
Well, Dave, to that point then, if that much money has been raised in just 1 month, and I would say that we still had a pretty good September and August as well. So if you think about just the last few months, how much money's been raised in the sector, that can't have all just been coming from traders trading amongst ourselves. I think for several years we talked about, hey, it's just us precious metals traders trading amongst ourselves. If that's the case, is this the influx of generalist capital we've been waiting for? Is this institutions coming from outside the space getting positioned? Is this what we've been waiting for?
I mean, I think so, but if you still look at most gold developers, even after this recent move, you know, some of them have tripled, quadrupled, even gone higher. They're still trading at a 75% discount to their net asset value based on fair value. So, even though the general public is finally starting to come into gold stocks, into the miners and the mid-tiers, I still think that there's a lot of room for these developers to go much higher because I don't think most of them have discovered the higher risk sector, the higher risk junior developers, and especially the optionality plays and a lot of these quality drill plays now.
So at least in the short term, though, with all these shares being issued, a lot through life financings too, so immediately free trading, a lot also do have this 4 month hold. So over the next, let's say, 4 months, do you foresee a slowdown in some of the momentum in these stocks because of the new issued stocks that will be free trading and that churn that naturally happens?
Yeah, in bear markets, you see these financings consolidate, lower with a lower bias. But most of them I'm seeing that they're consolidating with a sideways to upward bias as investors take a look at it as positive, especially in several of them are also they're announcing share rollbacks. And that's been greeted with positivity from the marketplace as well. In bear markets, you see these financings, these big financings, these big dilutive financings, and share rollbacks. They're always a drag on share prices. They're always a reason to sell stocks for these investors. But in bull markets, they're consolidated, and then once they're consolidated, the share prices go higher. And if a lot of these companies, they have outstanding warrants, if some of them are coming into to expiring in the money, that gives the company even more money, and investors look at that as a positive in a bull market as opposed to a negative in a bear market because these warrants, they can act as a roadblock in bear markets, but they're just speed bumps in bull markets along the way to going higher along the Lassonde curve and a lot of these companies that are de-risking these high margin projects.
Well, let's talk about that second leg of the Lassonde curve, or the first leg of it for that matter. All this money raised ultimately is dilutive, but the idea is that the companies can go out and create more value with it than what they had previously. So they raise the money to go drill, and the drilling presents more value, or they raise the money to de-risk, or permit, or put out a study, and that supposedly builds value. Now, we know that reality is most of these companies are going to blow this money and not build enough value to outpace the dilution. So, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? I mean, we all thought that a lot of these companies were going to go by the wayside during this bear market that continued for longer than we all expected. And we thought that, hey, a lot of these lifestyle companies and these companies that really are de-risking projects that are never going to become a mine, they're probably going to go by the wayside, but they didn't. And matter of fact, I think there was even more companies added from spinoffs. So that makes it tough for these, investors to get into the right companies to hold for the long term. You just have to make sure you do that. And you have to do your proper due diligence. You look at the management, you look at the project, look at where they raised money, you look at the share structure, you look at management and how much shares do they own? What did they pay for their shares? Do they have a bunch of cheap shares in an IPO finance? Do they participate in all the financings? You want to make sure these management teams are fully aligned with shareholders and their projects are based inside of large district scale land packages that are eventually going to attract a major. Because while they're de-risking these projects, you want them to show proof of concept that this is eventually going to become a mine. So you still have to do your due diligence and not just buy willy-nilly in the junior sector because sure, once these up legs happen, like we just have, everything starts going up. But you notice when we have a correction, it's the turkeys that go down the most.
It is. And look, it's been that kind of environment where you could buy anything and it went up. It does get harder eventually, but hey, it's still a pretty good environment out there. So still good to be invested. But as always, do your due diligence. Let's shift focus a little bit. We have been talking a lot about copper holding above $5. But when we look at the copper stocks, it's a mixed bag. The juniors aren't really doing much. The majors, many of them are doing quite well. And you look at COPEX, the Global X Copper Miner ETF, that's been on an absolute tear, especially just in the last couple months. Quite frankly, it's straight up ever since that April drop after Liberation Day. David brings up the question to me, and something that I'm kind of seeing maybe play out here is similar to what gold did last year, where gold broke out, the majors did better, the higher quality gold stocks did well, and then we started to see this flood of capital into the juniors. Is this year, 2025, for copper, like last year, 2024 was for the gold market, where it could all be setting up for a lot more money filtering into a lot more stocks for copper, as long as the copper price stays up there, probably into next year?
Yeah, and I've been harping on this for the past several months. I was focusing more on copper a couple months ago. I added a copper junior that was trading that was well below the radar. That's de-risking a very large project, and the stock has gone up like 65, 70% since I recommended it and purchased it myself. So, yeah, I mean we take a look at the headlines here. We got Glencore, their output fell. They're down 40% since 2018 on their copper output, and the copper price in London hit a record high on supply concerns. So, the copper price is back above $5 a pound. If you take a look at the stock market, it continues to make all-time highs. Tangible assets, stocks, everything's making all-time highs here. But as far as the copper juniors are concerned, they're still trading well below fair value, I believe, especially the higher risk ones, the earlier stage ones. So, but like I said, as far as the gold and silver stocks, you have to apply that thinking to copper stocks as well, as far as picking the right ones to ride for the long haul.
Well, and Dave, copper is an interesting one in that if you think building a gold mine or a silver mine takes a long time, wait till you see how long it takes you to build a copper mine. So when you look at the economic studies, you have to factor in things like permitting, social license. Can we actually get this project built? There's a big NIMBY, not in my backyard effect with copper mines that are large. Underground mines are smaller, but they're less disturbance, sometimes easier to get permitted. But when you look at the crop of copper developers, are there anything you look at as deal breakers where you wouldn't touch it because of maybe a wart or some hair that's just too big to move it forward?
Yeah, I mean, jurisdiction is key, management is key, and like I said, size is key in everything that I buy. It has to be big. It has to be big enough to eventually attract a major or a mid-tier to take it out and hopefully not take it out too soon. So, but and management is a big one also, I mean, the first thing I ask when I talk to companies is I'm speaking with management. I ask them, how much do you own? How much did you pay for your shares? Are you participating in the financings? You want to make sure that these management teams are fully aligned with shareholders because, like Rick Rule has said so often, 80 to 85% of these juniors are lifestyle companies, or they're de-risking projects that will never become a mine.
Yeah, it's true, but that doesn't mean that they can't run either. But I guess on the copper front, how important is it to you that they have at least a resource and then even up from there, some sort of economic studies? What sort of emphasis do you put on those companies?
Yeah, I'm not touching drill plays yet as far as the copper market is concerned. I just added a drill play in a gold drill play for the first time in like 3 years that I really like. But yeah, it's got to have a large land package and working on a large resource that could get a lot larger. Preferably, if I can see that management sees that it's got a 20 to 25 year mine life, then I'm going to be interested, but it has to be in a really good jurisdiction, and it has to. I mean, a lot of these are low grade, these larger projects, and I like the companies that are going in and rethinking a project that has been considered low grade for a long time. That maybe they've found a high grade core, a higher grade core. I've got a couple companies like that have done really well, where they go in and they find a higher grade core and they de-risk it from the inside, and they bring up the grade to attract a major or a mid-tier strategic partner.
Dave, when you're looking at these copper stocks, I guess in the same way that you look at gold or silver stocks, how much of it do you really factor in as far as the discount to their net present value? As far as do you use a different multiplier? Do you discount it differently than they do in the studies? Because I still see some of these projects trading at a very tiny fraction of what they actually would be worth. I don't expect them to get full value, but it seems like the copper stocks almost get penalized on two fronts. One, on their multiplier, but also since we use a typically a 10-year discounted cash flow model, if an asset's going to run 20 or 30 years, you're basically washing out the second 10 years or the third 10 years if you're only using a 10-year discounted cash flow method. So do you value them any differently?
Not really. I look at peer valuation is a big one too, because I like turnaround stories. Like I said earlier, I like companies that go in and they rethink a project that has got, they've got the attraction of being large, but the problem of being lower grade and not working in a $4 copper environment. So they'll go in and they'll take a look at the structure and say, okay, look, we found this higher grade area, and we're gonna work on bringing up the grade, so bringing up the margins. So if you look at peer valuations, they're trading at a big discount to peers, even though they've got this large project. So that's a big thing that I look at right there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like looking at all the peer comparisons too, and just seeing where the disconnects are, and not necessarily trying to anticipate where, let's say, the resource would go or the economics would go. Simply compare it to other peers and find the ones that are trading at discounts. Make sure it's not for a good reason, and yeah, that can be your opportunity. It's worked time and time again in this sector. Dave, we're out of time, but thank you as always for your time. I'm glad we waited for later in this week, and I hope everybody found this conversation on precious metals useful. What we're going to be doing in the next segment, again, focusing on the energy sector. So everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.